Welcome to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapelboro's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. And it begins now.
Fantastic experts to come together to exchange information and share it with you about the status of education in our community now. First of all, we got the superintendent of the Chapel Hill Carver Schools, Tom Frisella. Got the Donna Coffey, who is the Orange County chair of the board. Mark Jewell, who's the North Carolina Association of Educators vice president. Mia Burroughs, Orange County commissioner. And Ronnie.
Ronnie Dossey.
Yes. Who is the member of the Chapel Hill Carver board. So education is so important to us for so many reasons, in part because our children and grandchildren are participating in the public schools here in Chapel Hill, Carver, and Orange County, and also because we understand how important education is to all of us, whether or not we happen to have family members in school at this particular time. We're proud in this community to have the most highly rated school systems and schools, but we still have lots of challenges and problems to deal with. The achievement gap, teacher pay, losing teachers to other communities, trying to figure out a way to have appropriate equality for different kids with differences in the classroom. So we're gathered together here to talk about these challenges. And I've asked each of our panel members to introduce themselves and to introduce their concerns with a brief statement to begin with, beginning with the school superintendent here at the Chapel Hill Carver Schools, Tom Frisella. Welcome back again, Tom.
Thank you.
You're a hero for sharing your plate with us.
Well, in the Chapel Hill Carver City Schools, very much like other schools in North Carolina and actually probably in other places in the country, one of our biggest obstacles is placing high-quality teachers in our classrooms, because we feel if we can solve that problem and do the right things and providing the right kind of atmospheres in our school, then the big issue that we face is the achievement gap and how do we close that gap. And our approach has been through instruction and providing high-quality instruction for all of our students. But to begin that process, we have to have the teachers and high-quality teachers in all of our schools. So if you put those two together, and right now with what's happening in the state of North Carolina and with the funding levels and support for teachers, it makes that task pretty difficult.
Well, we'll follow. I'm sure all of us will have some concerns to express and questions and exchange of views about the achievement gap. It's a longstanding challenge for us that we probably won't solve tomorrow but have to keep working on every day. I'm Mark Jewell, is Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Educators. Mark, welcome. What's at the top of your mind?
Sure. We have a big list. I always talked about, much what Tom was saying, we want to return North Carolina back to a world-class public school system in the country. I actually came to North Carolina in 1997 and was recruited out of West Virginia, and I came here because it was a teacher destination. And that's because they were moving towards the national average and beyond in teacher salaries. They were also offering community-based wraparound services in my school district and many others, I'm sure, like Chapel Hill Carborough. I'm from Greensboro in Guilford County, but we invested in with resources and technology and guidance counselors, social workers, and those types of services to make sure we develop the whole child in North Carolina. And we're moving in a positive trajectory for a number of years. And what I've seen since I've been NCAE president, and particularly since 2013, is I've seen an erosion of the commitment from our General Assembly and the governor on investing in North Carolina public education. But I also say that I am an optimist, and I am convinced that the will of the people of North Carolina know that a strong public education system builds a strong economy, and that we do that with resources, we do that with great teachers, and We've got to make sure that North Carolina is a teaching destination, and we've got to make sure that we have people in the pipeline to fill the vacant positions right now. I talk to colleagues across the state, and when we have, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 vacant positions still in North Carolina, it does become an equity issue here. I'm very concerned when we have a shortage of elementary teachers in some of our rural school districts. We've had science and math positions that have had substitutes for 2 and 3 years in North Carolina. That is not the North Carolina way. And we've just got to continue to raise our issues that we know that a strong education system builds a strong North Carolina. And we're here as NCAE to make sure that happens.
Well, Mark Jewell, thank you very much for that approach. One of the folks who represents us in the public in terms of oversight of our public school system here in the Chapel Hill Carver system is Ronnie Desai.
Ronnie Desai,
who has been so charitable for me as I have a learning disability, and she's helping me. From the perspective of a member of the school board, what's at the top of your list today?
Sure. So I think of three things that are big concerns in my mind, and a couple of those were, I'll echo Mr. Jewell and Dr. Frisella's comments around teacher recruitment and retention. I think teachers are fundamental to the education process, and we're starting to see the gap already in our schools in terms of our ability to recruit and retain teachers. But looking backwards, we're also seeing a future gap coming in the enrollment in higher institutes of education. So we've seen over the last past 5 years, we've seen about a 30% decline in enrollment in schools of education. And so that's a very disturbing trend. And I think some of the context to that is the national conversation around the lack of value that's placed on teachers overall, as well as our, you know, locally in North Carolina, are not prioritizing funding and support of the teachers as we should. So that's the biggest thing for me, is kind of the teacher aspect. And then I'd say more specifically to the Chapel Hill Carbo City Schools, I have great concerns about our assets, our facilities. We are, we'll probably talk some more about this in the next hour, but we are, we've been fortunate that our county commissioners are placing a bond in the fall that will allow us to do a first phase of work around our facilities, but that's something that needs substantial investment, and I would love to see more support from the state around that as well. And then the third thing I'll talk about is, I'll call it the opportunity gap. We've been calling it achievement gap, but I like to sort of focus it more on the narrative of opportunity versus achievement, because it feels like that then sort of places some of the blame on folks who've historically been underserved in education. And so when I talk about children of color, English language learners, exceptional children, and on and on and on, I'd really love us to think about, and I know we're doing a lot of work in the district, really reinforcing the work that we're doing to really see more growth in those areas.
Thank you so much. Talking more about people who are facing these challenges online, Drew Ware is the principal at Estes Hills, and I bet you have some special concerns that might go beyond some of the things that we've talked about so far.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record from our three previous guests talking, that it really comes down to the teacher in the building. I mean, it's clear from my experience being in the building that the people who have the biggest impact on the success of a child are the teachers. And the worry is that every year that I've been a principal, I've gotten fewer and fewer resumes come across my desk. You hear from the local universities about how the number of teachers coming through those programs are diminishing, and it is a worry, because they are the most important thing. And broadly, as I have gone through my career as an educator, when I started, teachers were really thought of as the solution. And now the feedback that it seems that Some people think that teachers are the problem, and that is just not so. But how do we attract people to a position when we're not paying them what they need, and then we're saying, you come into this position and you're the problem? It becomes so difficult to attract the highest quality of people. So being sure that we really change the tone around how we talk about teachers and their professionalism, and how we really attract them and get high quality people into the profession and maintain the ones that we already have is paramount.
Thank you, Drew. Amir Burrows, you're one of the representatives on the as a county commissioner. Thanks for all you're doing. We're focusing on education. And from your standpoint, at the top of the funding source for our local schools, what's it sort of at the top of your list of concerns or worries or opportunities?
Well, for me, the first thing that I think in all of this I don't want to forget is that we really do continue to have excellent school systems here in Orange County, two excellent school systems. But the challenge will be maintaining that in the face of all the various things that folks have mentioned that are coming primarily from the state level. And I think I have hope because it's the residents of Orange County who have made that happen. I don't think there's any coincidence that the fact that we are such a strong university community that folks have been focused on education. But again, the challenge is enormous. I served on the school board before I came to the county commission, and my 6 out of my 7 years were great recession years. And it never occurred to us for one minute that we would be in this day still operating under recession-level constraints this many years out with the amount of recovery that our state and nation have had. And I, of course, firmly put that problem into the hands of the North Carolina General Assembly. The Orange County commissioners are continuing to try to fill those gaps, but there'll be a limit to how long we can do that. The limiting factor is we have many, many constituents, very rare in this world, who say, yeah, please raise my taxes. Schools are important. God love them. That's a lovely thing to hear. But we do always have to also worry on the other side of taxing people out of the county. Not everybody can continue to pay the higher taxes. And, again, that's squarely on the fact that we continue to have to fill holes coming from the General Assembly. So we're in many ways in a very good place, but it will become increasingly hard to support that.
Well, Donna Coffey, you're the Orange County Board Chair. From your perspective.
Well, I would just like to echo what other panelists have said. It's no secret that we are at the hands of the state legislators right now. And as a lifelong North Carolina resident and a product of North Carolina public schools, I think that the biggest issue facing schools right now is the sustainability for public education in spite of the North Carolina General Assembly's lack of investment. And we are extremely appreciative for commissioner support. It has been historically high and has met our needs. But I agree with Mia. I'm not sure how long that can be sustained either. So I think it's going to be a real balancing act from here on forward.
Well, we were directed. I have a question for you, and we'll get it over with quickly. But I was directed by the panel that preceded us to ask the question, why haven't we moved to consolidate the Orange County schools and the Chapel Hill Carver schools? And I'm going to go to Mia Burrows first to introduce the question.
Well, there's a long and storied history on the topic of what people generally refer to as merger. And there was a very heated discussion about that. Donna can help me remember. Was that 8 or 9 years ago, I think?
2001.
All right. Time has flown. There's a number of questions about that. I think from, again, my knowledge primarily from having been a city school board member is that you don't save all that much money from doing it. As a matter of fact, you may save almost nothing. I would feel very strongly that we should merge if I felt that we had a severely disadvantaged school district among the two. But I don't think we're there. As a matter of fact, the Orange County schools received, truth in advertising, a little bit more money than they even asked for in the last couple of years for various formula reasons. So I feel like both districts are getting what they need. But if we were one of the counties, maybe Halifax I think might be a good example, where there was a huge disparity in what the districts were getting, then I would have a different view of that.
Anybody else have comments about the question? Tom Frisella?
Yeah, I'd like to say that one of the things that, can really assist in this conversation is not so much about merging the districts, but how what kinds of things can happen that the districts can collaborate and maybe do some things more efficiently and effectively. And most recently, it was an opportune time, Orange County Schools, with a new superintendent who's, I believe, a real collaborator. We've been doing a lot and having conversations about what kinds of things can we do together. And right now we're talking about even including Durham Tech in working with us in some common professional development, whether it's through a common onboarding process, because there's some of the training that we do, whether it's equity training, some basic skills for new teachers coming in. If we're doing the same thing, can we do it in a more cost-effective way? So I think the gains we would get maybe out of merging or consolidating, I think a lot of those things can be addressed if we really get creative and think about the things that we can share and do together. And those conversations are beginning. We already do a lot of things together, whether it's through the transportation and busing and how we, you know, share some facilities and maintenance of our buses. And there's a lot of other examples of how we work together. And I think we're at a really good place now with the school boards and with the administration really looking for ways to work together. So I think a lot of the ideas of merger are already happening, but not in a specific way of really putting one school district together.
Other comments?
Yeah, I would just like to add.
This is Donna Coffey.
Back in 2001, there was the merger study, and the study revealed that it would not save dollars and cents, if you will, because in order to merge the districts, state statute says you have to lift the per pupil spending to the higher of the two districts that you merge. And so that would require a tax rate increase or a significant, at that time it was 18 to 20 cents, I believe. So I agree with Dr. Pacella that merger, there are other alternatives, I think, and the collaboration pieces that have begun that have been standing for a while, but really we've ramped those up. And the great example is on the upcoming bond, there's a transportation center on there that would be a joint transportation center between the two districts that would service the buses for both districts. So I think there's other alternatives, but you know that was a very lengthy study, and I'm not sure that Moses Carey was cited in the earlier conversation as being the one who brought this up. And I will quote Moses saying, the juice at that point did not appear to be worth the squeeze.
Well, let's leave it, unless others of you have. I'd like to bridge on one of the questions, and Rania, you raised a new term for us to use, of opportunity gap. And I wonder if we could ask if you could help all of us understand what the difference in approach in terms of facing the opportunity gap and finding strategies to overcome it, whether there are differences in the approach from the Chapel Hill Carver schools versus Orange County schools. And why don't you lead us off by saying what you see the Chapel Hill Carver schools are doing and what needs to be done or what what opportunities are there to do different and
so
more
just
things?
To give some context, the opportunity gap is this idea that students of color and some students of socioeconomically disadvantaged backgrounds tend to score significantly lower on standardized tests than white children and some Asian children. And so significantly, we talk about 50 points of difference. So for example, if you look at black students and they might score 40% proficiency on average on a standardized test, your white students may score 90%. And this is not just a Chapel Hill problem, it's a national problem. But it seems exacerbated maybe in Chapel Hill because of the strength of our teaching and the outcomes that where we see such success in other parts of our educational environment. And so what I'm excited about where Chapel Hill Carrboro, and I know Orange is also moving in this direction as well, is one of the things that is really a strength to closing this gap is curriculum rigor. And over the past 2 to 3 years, Chapel Hill Carrboro Schools has really put a focus on developing curriculum, including equity, understanding, and cultural sensitivity so that as we're teaching students of different backgrounds, we are understanding how to reach them. But it's something that benefits all students because the rigor is there that enables growth across all of our students. And so I think that's the foundation. The curriculum rigor. We've also been doing a lot of professional development and training teachers so teachers understand how to reach certain students and have that baseline of the curriculum that they can go do the work to help students who might be falling behind. And then a third thing that I think is really, really important and that I'm quite excited about is this really focusing on early childhood education. So what we know is that the opportunity gap is sometimes a function of race, but also a function of economics. And when kids of poverty start school, kindergarten, they're sometimes 5,000 to 10,000 words behind more affluent families. And so that if you imagine that as your baseline that you grow from into graduation, it's hard to overcome that, right? And so what we're focusing on and what I'm excited about in the next few years is really strengthening professional development, looking at a consolidated preschool that enables our preschool teachers to get together and really strengthen the learning on the educational early childhood education, as well as my hope is that this also becomes an opportunity to build other support services around them, like physical health care, physical therapy, occupational therapy, that really enables a strong start. So when we put those students, when we put our students into the elementary schools, they will be able to succeed and they will have a strong start. And I think that will play a very high role in closing the gap. And I don't want to, discount the other work because at the same time we also have students in the elementary, middle schools, and the high schools who we have to figure out, right? And so the other piece of the work, talked about the instructional rigor, but is looking at our discipline gaps where we see kids of color disciplined at much higher rates, statistically significantly higher rates that are disproportionate to other students. And as well as looking at opportunities to identify more kids into our higher level courses. And so there's a lot of work happening in the district right now around that. I'm excited that we've got really strong community engagement from folks who continue to push the board in the district on this type of work. And we'll continue to have conversations around that. And there's still a lot of work to be done, but I think we're starting some of the big kind of footprint work to see longer term growth.
Thank you very much. Donna Coffey, may I ask you to comment? And are there differences in approaches in Orange County?
Actually, no. We are working on many of the same things. The one thing that we have not approached on a holistic basis, as Chapel Hill Carver City Schools has, is the pre-K needs. And we'll get there, but we're just not there yet. But we are looking at clear curriculum alignment. and how to use the information and data that we're gathering to meet the needs of individual children. And one of the ways that we're, one of the tools that we have in place is our one-to-one laptop initiative that we're currently redesigning. And we're using technology to engage children, engage the students, and help them understand creativity and collaboration through the use of technology, and that's one of our ways. We are also moving towards, with regard to discipline, moving towards a more counseling approach through positive behavior reinforcement, and just we've seen over the last year, this current year, we've seen about a 38% decrease in suspensions through working with positive behavior reinforcement. So,
it's an important, important and continuing matter. Do others of you have different perspectives or comments?
No, I think I could just add on to what they
were
saying.
This is Mark Jewell.
Yes.
From Association of Educators.
Definitely appreciate the comments from our school board members there to see that we're exactly on the same page as far as coming from the teacher perspective, particularly when we talk about equity and the opportunity gaps. I like that phrase. I'm going to start using it, Ronnie.
I'd love to socialize it.
Yes, it is. And something that we have been really trying to raise the attention. I think Drew had said that too many times that teachers, the finger pointing is that teachers are the blame. And I tell people, I said, we are always, always looking to better and improve ourselves, that we've never arrived, that we are always becoming as far as a public education institution. However, I do think that we need to really look at poverty in North Carolina. We don't have a public education problem. We have a poverty problem. You know the statistics, somewhere around one in five children are coming to poverty. Half of those are in extreme poverty. Until we address early intervention through what I believe would be a universal pre-K system in order to address the issues. Ronnie talked about the vocabulary disadvantage. It's around a 2-to-1 discrepancy with children with the middle-class SES and those from poverty. By the time you graduate, if they graduate, it's a 4-to-1 deficit in vocabulary. You never catch up once you get in there. So we've got to look at resources there to look at the root of the problem instead of the symptoms, because we start addressing them too late. I do think that we have a great opportunity now with the federal change in legislation with ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, with having more information provided to our parents, particularly on school culture and discipline, and being able to give better data to our students of color, our students with disabilities, and suspension policies also, and bullying with their LGBT communities, to see how that's impacted in our school culture and environment. So having said all of that, I think that from a broader perspective that we are doing a fantastic job out there with the resources that we have. And we do look at Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County as a model of what we all strive to be. But to the comment I think that Mia was saying, that we're still operating at recession level. Oh. So we are in austerity mode here in North Carolina, and we do deserve better than that in our citizens, but most importantly, our children.
Well, on that challenging note, it's time for us to take a break. We'll be rejoining this wonderful discussion about education in our community after this short break.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.
Summer is rapidly approaching, and fall will be here before you know it. Need some extra courses to help you prepare for college? Need to complete your high school diploma or get a GED? Looking for training or certification to help you get that dream job? Classes begin May 16th, so visit durhamtech.edu and search summer registration. Schedule a meeting with an academic advisor who will give you access to our web registration system. You'll be amazed at the great selection of interesting courses you'll find. And get ready to do great things.
It's against state law to dispose of TVs and computers in our landfills. Dispose of TVs, computers, tablets, phones, and even burned out holiday lights at any of the 5 waste and recycling centers in Orange County. These full service and staffed centers are available for all Orange County residents to reduce and manage their waste, from bottles, cans, and cardboard to scrap metal and yard waste and everything in between. Learn more at orangecountync.gov/recycling.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government. Once again, here's D.G. Martin.
Well, welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum. We're talking about K-12 education. If you have questions or you'd like to submit them to the panel, you can do it by using the hashtag WCHL Forum, which I have to confess I wouldn't know how to do. But if you can do it, we'd be happy to have you join us in questions. Mia Burroughs, Orange County Commissioner, mentioned during the break that there's a little bit more to say about one of the things we've been talking about, and we'd love to hear you talk about that.
Well, I'm thinking of saying a little bit more about preschool, only because this is something that's going to be a topic before the voters with the bond referendum. So one of the things about preschool is that it has a very long-term impact. I come from a long career in reproductive health, and particularly teen pregnancy prevention. And we used to say that the very best contraceptive is a well-run preschool program.
Well,
If it's good, it can make a long-term difference for kids. And so how that ties back here to what we're up to here in Orange County is one of the things that the Chapel Hill-Carberry School District has planned to put on the bond referendum is a pre-K education center. And that ties back to our conversation about teachers and strengthening teachers. And if teachers are together, in this case the pre-K teachers, are together in one place, there'll be many more opportunities to strengthen their practice, and they can help each other and work together and be together. So that will be coming up.
One or two of these, one for each school system?
At this point, it's just Chapel Hill Carrboro. Each school district prioritized what their greatest needs were. And at this time, Orange County did not decide that was their greatest need. One of the things for Chapel Hill Carrboro that pre-K center does is that it removes the pre-Ks from multiple schools, and it creates additional student capacity, and that will much delay a need for an entire new school as we go forward. So that's a taxpayer reason why that is a good idea. But in fact, as you can tell from my choice of careers, where my heart lies,
well,
is I think it's really going to be good for kids.
What a great comment. I want to come back in a minute when we talk about the bond issue and the different ideas that will be coming back as you all meet together later on soon. But as I mentioned to you during the break, I'm real interested in your approach, not just to the in terms of teacher recruitment and retention. Of course, the funds that are provided by the General Assembly or not provided by the General Assembly are major and probably the most important reason that we're having difficulty in that area. But I also wanted you to talk about things that can be done by you guys, and that is the making the workforce and the work environment more attractive. And the reason that it came to me is a couple of teachers who are leaving said it's the money, but it's not so much the money. It is that we just have to do so many other things that are not what I signed up to do in terms of the opportunity to teach and have relationships and mentor and motivate kids. But I'm having to do so much, and the regulatory environment is so oppressive, and as you all mentioned earlier, the lack of appreciation. So Astrid Ware, who's the principal of Estes Hill, a school, to talk about what he does and what he can do to, and what might be done by others, not outside of the salary increases, to make the work of our teachers be more pleasant, more productive, and more rewarding.
I think the first thing that we can look at is what I try to do is think about what things do we have to do and that we don't have to do. And if there are things that we have more flexibility on, then hearing from teachers, listening to them and saying, well, maybe we can adjust this, we can change this, we can pull this paperwork back, or we can fine-tune it in such a way that it's easier to complete. But there are going to be things that we have to do that are required. And so I really believe in empowering the staff to work with me to help figure out the problem, help solve it, to help complete whatever directive we have to do, whatever thing we have to finish and complete. So it's a really an idea of this idea of distributive leadership, is that these are things that we have to implement, and let's figure out how to best do it and how to best do it to meet the needs of students in our building. I really try to start with the purpose and the why. So when we frame something that we're doing, an initiative that we're taking on, really ground it in the purpose and the why, that it's not just something new, that there is a reason behind it, and that reason 100% of the time centers around students and helping students be successful. I try to give as much choice as possible so that as we're implementing this, you don't want everybody going in completely different directions, because that disrupts and hurts the implementation process. But where there's the ability to give choice, give choice. Let people figure things out on their own when that is possible. And get in there and get your hands dirty with the teachers. One of the things that we're doing is we're implementing a new type of lesson planning that really requires tons of rigor. It's requiring it from our students, but it's requiring it for our staff, really thinking through how we're planning these lessons in a very deep and meaningful way. That's not something that I feel I can drop on their laps and say, okay, you do this. That's something I need to be in there with them, helping figure out, learning myself, having them teach me, and then if there's something I know, I can pass that along. But it's really a collaborative effort, I see the benefits of it. I see the benefits when I talk to my staff, I see that even though there's still frustration that comes up, that they trust and they believe that we are really in this together.
That's a great. Thank you very much, Drew Ware. And that's from a principal's perspective. And Tom Purcell, I'd appreciate it if you would talk about what you can do about that. And then one of those things is in recruiting and putting in place principals like Drew, who are sensitive and can relate directly to the teachers. Could you talk about how you see this challenge?
Yes, and as you bring up principals, and we've already talked about how probably the most important factor in improving student achievement is the teacher in the classroom, and most research will say that the second most important factor is the building principal. And when you can create environments such as Drew was talking about, teachers feel better about coming to work every day, because the culture in our schools is extremely important. What we're doing as a district, we have a program called Project Advance, that is really focused on professional growth, that we are actually providing a model, and I think is culture changing, where teacher movement on our local supplement scale will no longer be about years of experience, but about your own personal professional growth. We recently have been going to a number of job recruiting fairs at colleges and universities, and there could be upwards to 80 school districts all trying to woo the recent college grads. And the lines at the Chapel Hill table far exceeded any other. And it's because a lot of the students wanted to know and were very interested in Project Advance because they saw it as an opportunity that my advancement is not going to be based just on how long I've been there. It's about what I am doing in my classroom, not test scores, but more about my professional growth and that the district is going to assist you and support you in your growth. We have we're beginning a parallel model for our administrators, our principals, and looking at how they grow. Because if we're not in an organization where we're all growing, then it becomes more like work. And school should be a place for kids that's fun to be, and it should be a fun place for adults. And I think that's all about learning and growing together. And what Drew explained is how we're trying to get there.
Thanks so much for those. I'd love to keep talking about this, but I've been directed to ask you guys to talk about the bond issue. And what I would like to do, Mia Burrows, is for you to introduce the subject by talking just how we got to where we are now and the conversations that will succeed this one in terms of what's next in terms of the approach for the bond issue.
Sure. So bond process is actually quite a long technical process, but the overview is simply that the commissioners have been discussing really since I think March a year ago what we felt were critical topics for the bond, and then we had quite a bit of public discussion in the fall, and at this juncture we are having public hearings. We had one in Chapel Hill, we'll have one in the northern part of the county. The technicality is at this point we wouldn't change what's on the bond, but we could change the amounts. I'd be very surprised if we would
reduce
the
amounts.
Not locked in, but it's pretty darn close.
And give us just a brief outline of where the money
roughly,
where the money would go if the bonds, we do the bonds.
There are two pieces. There will be $120 million for the two school systems, and specifically for improving the safety of buildings, improving student capacity, and then also supporting the cooperation around the transportation center that Donna Coffey brought up earlier. And also just additionally within those projects, it's an effort to bring some of our schools that are a little bit more decrepit that we really want to believe up to modern standards. And so there's a $5 million piece that will be geared towards supporting and increasing affordable housing in Orange County.
Well, let me ask the representative of the schools, maybe Donna, starting with you, to say what are you going to be saying to Mia when you talk about these allocations, or is it all set?
Okay. Well, our district has worked on a plan for several years now, and the average age of our schools are 60-plus years old, so as you can imagine, we need to do lots of repairs. Our main focus is safety of our children, and then infrastructure needs such as roof replacement, failing heating and cooling systems, and we also have on our list of bond projects an addition to one of our high schools, a 500 student addition. To accommodate the growth at the high school level that we're experiencing, along with the collaborative transportation facility.
No real disagreement with the commission at this stage. These are things that you think they're going to do, or is this still up in the air?
We've explained our needs on several occasions, and at this point, we have not heard any real disagreement on that.
Well, from the Chapel Hill Carver schools, I'd love to hear both from Rennie and from Tom Sella, What are you worried about not getting? Maybe I'll better put it that way, that you really need.
Well, first and foremost, we are viewing this as a first step. Both the Orange County Schools and Chapel Hill Carbondale City Schools had in their studies of their school facilities, especially the older facilities, many more needs than are being addressed in this particular, what I guess I would refer to as phase one. And there's no guarantee there's going to be a phase two, but we're taking a view that this is a long-term project that might take 10 years, and it might be subsequent bonds, there might be other ways of funding. But our approach was to gain capacity, because unlike Orange County, we had some schools that were in the pipeline, so we wanted to increase capacity while at the same time addressing the preschool issue that would help us, as Mia had talked about. And the other major project is a major renovation of Chapel Hill High School, which is one of our oldest schools and in need of disrepair. Just to end with, Drew is principal of a school which is on that list that's coming up in the next phase of repairs, which is Estes Hills. So you can't do everything all at once, but we're taking a long-term approach and hoping there'll be more funds coming down the road.
Well, I get the feeling that there's not much. Are you feeling a lot of pressure from these, at least as far as allocation for schools, that the competition between the two school systems is causing you some grief in terms
no,
of...
No. Actually, I am delighted to say that I think that the school districts are working better together than ever, and that's to their credit and to the... And it strengthens both of them, I think. So, in fact, that's not the case. I think there's been some discussion among the commissioners as to the appropriate role of commissioners in deciding what projects to fund. But we had a good education session with the school districts, I think, about 2 weeks ago to discuss it. And I think we're getting to a level of comfort with the respective districts' requests. They've been working on this, both their proposals that will go into the bond for years in great detail using very highly qualified consultants. So I think we're getting to a point that it's pretty well set. So,
we'll leave this issue unless... do you have a comment about this?
I was just going to say, I think there's been a lot of work put into developing the priority list, and there's been a lot of discussion as well on how the priorities were determined when we talk about the list of projects that need to be done in the district. You could argue that every one of them should be number one, but the way that we really focused on phasing the projects enables us to do the work while also allowing us to increase capacity and in the longer term spend fewer dollars. So really trying to be responsible from a financial perspective, knowing the cost constraints we have. And that's really what guided, along with our considerations of safety and infrastructure repair, that's what really guided our prioritization toward, Chapel Hill and the Lincoln Center refurbishment.
Well, if I can't get any disagreement or difference of perspective going with respect to the bonds, what about on budget? Where do you see, and Mia Burris, maybe I could get you to introduce this and tell us where we are, and then see if there are some needs that are desperate, that are unlikely to be met, and some that you feel like definitely we will be able to take care of.
Well, you've now gotten into my homework from last week, and it was to read the budget requests as a commissioner from both districts. And they are ambitious requests. They would add up to an increase over $8 million for the county budget.
Have you gotten far enough so that if you took the request for both, what the impact on the tax rate would be?
Well, I thought you might ask that. So, did math. First of all, you need to have we don't have the context as commissioners yet as to what perhaps, savings we have, any kind of what the baseline of our own budget is. But if you're putting that $8 million and change on top of what we have now, if you did that, it would be a 5-cent increase on the tax rate. So that is not unprecedented, but it's very significant.
So if you could not find savings in other parts of county government and met the needs of the school systems as set out in their budget request, you'd have to raise the tax rates. Mm-hmm. The other option would be that you would ask them to go further and cutting back in some of their existing programs to free up money that you might be willing to give them.
Or we, as commissioners, would have to cut. They'd have to cut. We'd have to cut. And this is my opinion. I'm not actually even spoken with my colleagues at all about these requests. We'll probably hear a little bit more tonight, although we may not, on what others are thinking. But I do know from personal experience that both districts have cut because of those recession years. And it would have, I think it's fair to say that in both districts, if they have to cut significant amounts, it would have serious impact on the student experience. So we know that to be true. And at the same time, the county has been made some cuts over these years as well. So it is not going to be an easy discussion or...
Is it more fun to be on the side of the giving of the funds or on trying to persuade district county commissioners to give it to you?
Actually, I will say this. Because I served on the school board, as I mentioned earlier, six of seven of my years were recession years. So I got in my first year. We got to add some things, like a few school buses, and it was like a no-brainer and easy. And then after that, we had to cut. And we felt very directly as school board members those cuts. I think there's just a little bit more distance for commissioners. Mm-hmm. However, the citizens of Orange County will not allow commissioners to be too distant. We will be hearing in detail from folks not only about the schools but all the other priorities that folks want funded, whether it's nonprofits or parks or all the kinds of things. We'll be hearing from folks. We're not too distant.
When the school systems make their presentations to you, do you look to the staff of the school systems or do you look to the boards of the school system to provide you with the kinds of information and opinion that you need to make your decisions? Who speaks to you?
Both, actually. I think that's a really interesting question, and I hadn't really thought about it. But we hear both from the superintendents and the school board members. And our school board members have quite a variety of long-term experiences, either relevant experiences as Donna Coffey. She used to work for the county. We have school board members who have long experience in pre-K and all kinds of things. So we rely on both. We rely on the wisdom of the professional educators, and we rely on that broader vision of the board members who've been in the community for years and understand where our citizens are coming from.
Well, Tom Frisell, when you talk in pretty soon, to me and her
tonight.
Colleagues. What are your introductory remarks going to be? You're going to have to say thank you, but please give me more, is sort of what you say.
Yeah, I think what's interesting this year, and Donna can probably talk to the Orange County schools, but I think it's very similar, that we've had close to $3 million in requests from schools and from programs that we have put aside to strictly focus on teacher salaries. To remain competitive in this part of the state, we have a significant problem, and if we don't raise our salaries, we are just not going to be able to recruit the teachers that we need. So we've put all our eggs into raising our supplement.
Over and above all some of these other programs that we've talked about.
Above everything else, we're putting everything else on hold to address attracting and retaining teachers.
And I would just add, this reinforces my first statement that teachers are the most important part of education. And to that end, we actually have taken a bit of a risk in Chapel Hill Carborough, and that we've approved already increasing the teacher salaries ahead of the county commissioner.
So you put some little pressure on...
Well, that was not our intent. Mm-hmm. Our intent was, we are right now in the middle of recruiting season, and we can't go out and tell teachers this is what we'll pay you when we're standing next to a table where Wake County or another district can pay them a lot more. And so what we want to do, and also with retaining our teachers, right? Like we.
Well, just to be clear, you've made commitments to teachers based on what you hope the county commission will be able to do.
Correct. And so to Mia's point, if the county does not fund that, we will have to look for cuts within our budget. And it will
How about over in the Orange County schools? Are you in the same boat?
We are.
The same approach.
We are we are in a very similar situation. We have not made that next step to go ahead and approve the increases. But our priority, our number one priority in this budget is taking care of teachers and staff. And we want to be the career destination for teachers. We have also, over the last couple of years, last year we implemented a vision insurance for our teachers, which is very different. Benefits aren't typically offered to teachers. This year we're also hoping to possibly get started on a dental insurance plan for them. So we're looking at supplements, salaries. We have much respect and appreciation for county commissioners, and they have historically gone over and above to support our school districts. We spend our money wisely and we prioritize it wisely. And so we're hoping that they will hear us out and see fit to have the same priorities that we do.
Well, I've got lots of other questions, and I know you all have lots of other comments, but I think we'll have to stop now and let me, on behalf of our Chapel Hill, Carver, and Orange County communities, thank each of you for what you've done for our children and our grandchildren and the members of our community and what you've done to help make this probably the best place in the world to live. And notwithstanding the challenges and problems that you face, we thank you for what you've done for us. We're going to have to conclude our discussion now with thanks. And we'll be right back with another part of the Chapel Cover Forum after this short break.
Thank you.
Oh, we're just so good. Thank you. Thanks for rescuing
me. Good to be among friends.
This year's WCHL Community Forum has been presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks again to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzu Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government.
Hi, I'm Dwight Bassett with Chapel Hill Economic Development, and we're thrilled to be the presenting sponsor for this year's WCHL Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract, retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open to business and open for business every day of the year. Follow us on Twitter at @CHEconDev. Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the triangle.
Brooks Pierce Law Firm is a proud sponsor of the WCHL Community Forum and a proud supporter of the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce. Our lawyers strive to provide excellent legal counsel in business and nonprofit matters, including employment, tax-exempt organizations, construction, intellectual property protection, and litigation. Find out how we can help your enterprise at brookspierce.com.
Kidzu Children's Museum in Chapel Hill is proud to sponsor the WCHL Community Forum because of the way it informs and empowers all community members. We like to do the same for children and families, nurturing curiosity, creativity, and self-directed learning. We call it inspired learning through creative play. With programs and experiences for children infant to tween and the adults who care for them, Kidzu Children's Museum at University Place in Chapel Hill, your community's resource for learning through play.
Hi, this is Don Rice, owner of the Molly Maid in Chapel Hill. The thought-provoking conversations taking place today on WCHL represents what this community is all about. The panelists are committed to making our community great, just like we are at Molly Maid. For 18 years, our family has been serving yours. My wife, Kathy, and I are proud to employ almost 40 people, doing our small part to keep our community vibrant and, of course, clean. As we support WCHL Community Forum, we hope you'll support our locally owned business by visiting us at mollymaid.com.
WCHL thanks the Town of Chapel Hill's Economic Development Office for presenting our 2016 Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open for business, open to business every day of the year. Follow them on Twitter at CHEconDev. That's CHEconDev. Economic Development in Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the Triangle.
This is Charlie Ferris, owner-operator of Jersey Mike's Subs on Elliott Road in Chapel Hill North. After 5 years, friends often ask if I'm sick of subs yet. The honest truth is no, and I don't think I'll ever tire the best sub sandwich on the planet. But I do have a secret. You can get any one of our mouth-watering subs on a salad. We call it our sub in a tub, and these range from the fresh and light turkey provolone to the protein-packed original Italian. We just leave out the roll and stack your favorite meats and cheeses on a bed of crisp veggies. Come try one today at Jersey Mike's Subs.